May it please the court, my name is Jeff Walsh. My registration number is 33762. I represent Mr. Saldivar. I'll try to reserve about 3 minutes for rebuttal. As the court's aware, we've raised two issues on appeal. A new evidence issue and a right to counsel issue. And I'd like to address the new evidence issue first. The primary question on that issue is, in the event of a new trial, would the newly discovered evidence here may undermine the prosecution's ability to disprove self-defense? That's necessarily a fact-laden inquiry. And so what I'd like to do is just go through the key pieces of newly discovered evidence and talk about why, were a new jury to hear that evidence, the prosecution would in fact be unable to disprove self-defense. First, the only eyewitness to this shooting, Ms. Frias, the victim's wife, she testified at trial that Mr. Saldivar ambushed him, that she and her husband were walking up the street innocently, and then in the dark of night, Mr. Saldivar ambushed them, running up to them, wielding a gun. This was a major, major problem for the theory of defense, of self-defense.
Mr. Walsh, I'm curious, why were they walking up the street?
It's a great question. And the reality is the evidence suggests that they were walking up the street very likely with a plan to kill Mr. Saldivar. There is no explanation for why they were walking when they were walking. They had
But what you're saying, that's a theory, that's not what the facts showed.
Right. What the facts show that they dropped their children off at Dairy Queen a block away. And they are walking away from their children. They're walking away from their car. They're walking one block directly in the direction of where Mr. Saldivar is known to live. It doesn't make any sense for why they're doing that. There's not evidence conclusively that they're going towards his house to kill him, that Mr. Frias is doing that, but it's extremely suspicious. I mean, Mr. Frias is wearing gloves, he's carrying a stolen gun, he's high on methamphetamine, he has a motive to kill Mr. Saldivar, he has in his possession a photograph of Mr. Saldivar, who he has only met on one occasion briefly. So this looks like an attempted hit.
Well, on the other hand, though, why is Mr. Saldivar walking toward the Dairy Queen with a gun?
Well, he knows that Mr. Frias has a motive to kill him. It came into evidence at trial.
How does he know that Mr. Frias is even there?
He doesn't.
So he's walking toward the Dairy Queen where they just happen to be, and he has a gun.
Well, if you look, according to the tapes, the newly discovered evidence, Ms. Frias, the only eyewitness to this case, they just bumped into each other. What she's saying, the new evidence is that they didn't even see each other, that they just bumped into each other in the street. And what we know, and she is not able to say who shot first. This is a gunfight with two men shooting at each other, and the eyewitness doesn't know who shot first.
Counsel, so as to the first shot, I think that your newly discovered evidence theory certainly could potentially, you know, suggest a basis for self-defense. But once the victim is on the ground, there's two additional shots to the back.
Yeah.
So how is it that this evidence supports self-defense as to those? He was disabled. There was no longer a need for him to defend himself.
Well, I don't think, I disagree with your last comment that there's no longer a need.
Can you explain how that fits in?
If you put yourself in Mr. Saldivar's shoes, it's pitch black. It's dark. He's in a gunfight. They have a car between them. They're kind of like running around the car shooting at each other. Mr. Saldivar doesn't necessarily know in that pitch black night that he has hit Mr. Frias, that he has fatally disabled him. All he knows is that he's gone, and Mr. Frias has gone to the ground.
So let me stop you there. So what did the facts show about the second and following shots?
So the facts show that Mr. Frias goes to the ground. If we're in Mr. Saldivar's state of mind, he doesn't know necessarily why he went to the ground. He might have gone to the ground for cover. Might have gone to the ground to be shooting at him underneath the car. He might have gone to the ground because he's injured but not killed. So he goes around the car and immediately upon seeing him on the ground, he shoots him twice. And there's, which I mentioned this in the reply brief, there's two scenarios, right? There's one scenario is he doesn't know whether or not he's, he doesn't know if he's dead or alive. He doesn't know if he's just laying on the ground to cover. He doesn't know if he's wounded but not fatally wounded and could still turn over and shoot him. He's removing the threat to his life. That's one scenario. An alternative scenario is, yeah, I know I killed him, and I'm upset that this guy just tried to kill me, and he's mutilating a corpse. But it doesn't, and yes, and I can see that it's also possible that in cold blood, you know, he just walks up and kills him.
So that would be a third scenario.
That's a third scenario that I acknowledge. But the point is, it's the prosecution's burden of proof. They have to disprove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Salazar was defending himself. And when we now know that these two men just bumped into each other in the street, and we don't know who fired first, how on earth does the prosecution disprove that Mr. Salazar was defending himself?
Well, but the newly discovered evidence isn't limited to the statements you're relying on. She said some other things that would seem to incriminate your client in those phone calls, and those would come in too.
Would you mind sort of
She denied that the defendant intended to, or that the victim intended to kill the defendant,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or that the victim even knew the defendant was around in those phone calls.
Okay, so regard, can I address those 2 points?
Sure.
So with respect to saying that was another huge hole in the theory of defense in the first trial was Mr. Salazar says, Mr. Frias appears to have been coming to kill me. And Julie Frias, this one eyewitness, says, well, that can't be true. We didn't even know where he lived. How could we have been going to kill him? We didn't even know where he lived. Well, what comes out after trial is she knew exactly where he lived. And in fact, and the reason she knows where she lived is because she went to this elaborate ruse to try to lure him away from his home because she knew that her husband was going over there. And she absolutely knew where he lived. That is a fundamental piece of new evidence that at trial she says, I didn't even know where he lived. And I didn't talk to him before the shooting. Now we learn after trial, yes, I did talk to him before the shooting, and I went through this elaborate ruse to try to lure him away from his home.
But wait a minute, let me stop you there. The defendant would all obviously know if she had talked to him, so how is that newly discovered?
That's not. What's new?
Well, you relied on it in the trial court that seemed to be the primary argument.
Well, the primary argument was the why she called. So it's not newly discovered to Mr. Saldivar, the fact of the phone call.
Did the fact of the phone call come out at the trial?
No, she denied it. He crossed
on right, but he knew, but he thought differently. He could have testified.
Could have.
He could have.
But he didn't.
He could have introduced phone records. He could have. But none of that's newly discovered.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I agree with you wholeheartedly. What's newly discovered is Julie Frias' admission as to why she made that call. She says, I made that call to lure you away from your house because I was afraid of what would happen if my husband and you saw each other.
How does that
going over into that area?
I don't see how that supports self-defense. That supports the idea that she didn't want them to meet.
Here's why. Because if she's truly just going over there for the innocent reason of having ice cream with her kids, and she's scared to death of these two men seeing each other, bumping into each other because he lives a block away, then why doesn't she just say, we're not going to ice cream, kids? She's the parent. She's the one in charge. She just said, we're not going to ice cream. We're not going to that Dairy Queen one block away from Mr. Salazar's house. Instead, she goes through this elaborate ruse of calling Mr. Salazar saying, my husband's not with me. I'm on the far side of town. Come see me now so we can have this illicit meeting. You know, so she's trying to get him out. Why does she have to go through this elaborate ruse unless she actually doesn't really have control over them going to that Dairy Queen, unless her husband has an alternative motive for being at that Dairy Queen, which would explain why he's walking towards Mr. Salazar's house with gloves on his hands, with a stolen gun, high on methamphetamine, with a motive to kill, and a photograph of my client. And so it's this is where the trial court abused its discretion, because it misapprehended the nature of the record. Because I agree with you, and I agree with the trial court, the fact of the phone call is not new. But it's the admission of the why.
I'm having trouble getting past the fact, though, that your that the defendant was walking to the Dairy Queen with a gun. Okay, if he wanted to defend himself, the easy way to do that, if he's tipped off, is to avoid the situation, not to go and confront somebody.
But he doesn't know they're there. He doesn't know they're at Dairy Queen.
Okay, right.
He has no idea. In fact, he's just been told. Prior to the shooting, he's just been told from his ex-girlfriend, Ms. Frias, that she's on the other side of town. There is no evidence, not a scintilla of evidence in the record, not a scintilla to suggest that he had any knowledge that they were going to be at that Dairy Queen. He has every right. The Dairy Queen is a block from his house. There's nothing suspicious, let alone criminal, about him walking from his house towards Dairy Queen. And why is he carrying a gun? Well, first of all, he has a constitutional right to do so, number one. Number two, Mr. Frias, the victim, has shot at him previously. That came into evidence at trial. And he's threatened his life. You know, this is a guy who these two men, there was an enormous amount of animosity between these two men. They wanted to kill each other. But it's not Mr. Salazar's job. He doesn't have to prove that he was defending himself. The prosecution has to prove that he wasn't. And when you consider this new evidence, They can't do it. It fatally undermines the prosecution's ability to disprove self-defense.
Ms. Frias testified at trial, and not terribly credibly, frankly.
Right.
She claimed to have a lot of memory loss. But you seem to be assuming that the jury would find this evidence somehow credible. That although she wasn't credible at trial, they're going to find her credible on the phone calls. I mean,
well, it's a little different. She has. This is a situation where she's being recorded. She has no idea she's being recorded. She's speaking to her.
I mean, if I were going to jail, I'd assume my phone call's being recorded or calling somebody in jail. I'd assume that.
I think it's a little bit much to expect of her that she was. I guess it doesn't even matter whether they believe her or not. The point is, it's so radically. It's such a radically different story that the jury would basically be in a position of saying, we can't believe anything this woman says. Nothing that comes out of her mouth can be believed. And if that's the case, the prosecution's case fails.
Well, except for the two shots in the back, and he's on the floor, on the ground, face down. And we have testimony that one of those shots was a fatal shot. So, and that the victim was alive when that shot was delivered.
No, that's not the test. The headshot was fatal.
It was fatal, but he was alive at the time he was shot in the back. That was the testimony. It would have killed him, okay, but one of the shots in the back would have killed him as well.
Had he been alive, one of the shots in the back would have killed him.
I think the record shows that the testimony was he was alive when he was on the ground.
Yeah, and I don't think it matters one way or the other. I think the fact is that there are three plausible scenarios. One is, this is a cold-blooded murder, he's shooting him in the back. Two is, it's pitch black at night. He has no idea. He has no reason to know that he has successfully shot and disabled this man who's shooting at him.
Where did the confrontation take place in relation to the Dairy Queen?
About 200 yards north.
In a parking lot?
No, it's in a street. It's like the Dairy Queen's over here. There's a parking lot over there. This is a street. And okay. Mr. Salazar lives back here. And they're walking up the street, and there's like a copse of trees right here, and that's where it happened.
If it's pitch black, how did he know who he was shooting at?
He's shooting at the man who's shooting at him. But because it's pitch black, he has no reason to know that he's hit his intended target, the man who's shooting at him. And so when he walks around the car, it is absolutely reasonable to think that what he's doing is trying to disable the threat of the man who was just shooting at him. He doesn't know, you know, he doesn't know that he's had that he shot the guy in the head. He doesn't know why the guy went to the ground. There's no evidence to suggest that this would be different if it was broad daylight. This is pitch black at night. There's no way Mr. Salazar could have known he hit him in the head. There's just no way. The two shots in the back are they're sort of after the fact conduct that are not probative as to what his state of mind was when he had an accidental meeting with this man who started shooting him.
But are you saying there's no way he could have known he was shooting somebody who was lying face down on the ground and shooting him in the back twice?
I think he absolutely knew what he was doing. He was shooting at a man who was just at about 15-foot range, was just shooting at him. And that's self-defense. He has a threat to his life, and he is entitled to use deadly force to defend himself. And if this was, imagine a police officer. Imagine a police officer shooting someone, a police officer being shot at by some suspect. The suspect goes down on his stomach. The police officer doesn't know if he's dead or not. For all the police officer knows, he's going to roll over on his back and start shooting him. The police officer absolutely is entitled to disable that threat and use deadly force to do so. It's the same scenario. That's my time's up.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, and may please the court. Carmen Morelita on behalf of the people. My attorney registration is 34852. So I would like to begin with the legal standard that applies to a motion for a new trial on grounds of newly discovered evidence. There are four elements, and the defendant must satisfy for them to be entitled to a new trial.
Yeah, we're familiar with those, so why don't we go right to the heart of this, okay?
Okay.
The defendant is relying most heavily on this phone call in which the victim's wife says a couple of things that are important. That she knew where the defendant lived, which was different than her trial testimony, okay? And that she had kind of, not suggested, but told the defendant, I don't want you guys meeting up. I mean, there's something there. Okay, those are very different. And don't those support the self-defense?
Okay, first of all, even if she said, if at trial she testified she did not know where the defendant lived, and then during the phone call she said she did know, that would have been at most impeaching evidence. Second of all, I have listened to all the relevant calls. And all she said is she did not want them to kind of run into each other. I don't think she ever said anything that she was afraid that the victim would kill or wanted to kill the defendant at all. I mean, she was very clear. I just did not want you to run into each other. She very specifically denied many times that the victim did not know that the defendant was there. And in fact, the victim believed the defendant was in Texas. She clearly also said she denied that the victim came to get defendant or that she even knew that defendant was in the area. She even asked, how did you know we were at the Dairy Queen? And there's another, this is a quote from the ex-girlfriend. The way I felt about it was that you did creep up on him. So I don't see how that testimony is any different from what she said at trial regarding this, the shooter being across the street, kind of crouching down with a gun.
But I guess to get back to Judge Furman's first question, why are Ms. Frias and the victim walking toward the house of the defendant away from the Dairy Queen, leaving their kids in the Dairy Queen? He's got a gun and gloves on.
Okay, so first of all, my recollection of the evidence is that they got out of the Dairy Queen and they're walking in the street. I don't know if they're walking in the direction of the defendant's house. I don't think there was any specific evidence as to where the defendant lived. They were just walking. The defendant, I believe the victim was in front and the ex-girlfriend was behind. And when the ex-girlfriend saw someone crouching, he said, they, and then the victim pushed her to the side and went to get cover. Again, from the record, I don't know exactly where they were just getting out of the Dairy Queen. And again, there's no evidence that they were walking towards any specific direction.
Doesn't the evidence that she knew where defendant lived, though, why is it just merely impeaching? It's not a collateral matter. I mean, it shows that she chose to go to a place that was close to where the defendant lived.
Okay, so let's say she knew where defendant lived. There's no evidence that the victim knew where defendant lived. Defendant alleged, the suggestion is that she knew, therefore he must have known. But that's a leap of logic. I mean, there's no support in the record that the victim knew where defendant lived at all.
So it's just coincidence? The defendant and victim are walking toward each other, both armed?
I don't know if it's a coincidence. There's no, I mean, we don't have, there's no evidence in the record to say this, what the way, I mean, defendant was there to kill the victim, or the victim was there to kill the defendant.
Well, my question had to do with what evidence is there for the reason that the victim and this woman is not, I guess, in the Dairy Queen? I mean, why did they leave the Dairy Queen?
Because they just got the ice cream and they were done with doing their business at the Dairy Queen?
Well, they left kids. They just wanted to go for a walk?
How? I don't know. I don't know what the reason was. But even, so let's assume that, I mean, what reason they had, we don't know. The fact that they got out and they were walking on the street. I mean, again, there's no evidence they were there for any particular reason. How does that support, or how does that refute, or I guess support the self-defense theory? Let's say they bump into each other by coincidence. That doesn't negate that the defendant knowingly killed the victim and did not in self-defense. The defendant seems or appears to assume that you need to have thought about this or plan this killing like beforehand. And that's not what the law requires. You can form your mental state. You don't need days or hours, or you can form it pretty quickly. They intend to kill someone, and he was convicted of second-degree murder. All the elements is that all that it was required is that he knowingly killed the victim and that he didn't act in self-defense in this case. And let's focus a little more on what she said. I think what she said...
Well, could I stop you,
yes,
because
please.
You're talking about the self-defense. Mr. Walsh was talking about the second shot, subsequent shots being suggestive of disabling, I guess, a primary aggressor, but a disabling shot rather than an intentional shot, which I think your brief points out could be an intentional shot. Intentional with intent to kill.
So I guess my argument, my point is that after he shot the victim in the head, the victim fell to the ground, and I believe this is Judge Jones' question. The pathologist or the coroner said that at that point he was pretty much brain dead, and he fell in a prone position, so he was facing the ground, and then the defendant stepped up on the curb, and this is a testimony from the ex-girlfriend, and shot him twice, and one of those shots would have been fatal, according to the pathologist. So my point is that after he shot the victim in the head, he was lying on the ground, not moving. He lost his right to self-defense, because at that point, there was no danger for him.
How do you address your opponent's contention that it could have been reasonable for the defendant to believe that he still posed a threat, especially given the lighting or lack thereof? How do you address that?
Okay. First of all, I don't have any recollection that the record supported it was pitch black. He was dark, yes. But even if he subjectively believed that he was in danger, it wasn't reasonable. He was on the ground, he had been shot in the head, he was not moving. He stepped up on the curb and shot it twice.
And what's the distance we're talking about?
According to the ex-girlfriend's testimony, I don't remember exactly. I think the victim fell on the sidewalk, and the victim came maybe in between two cars and then stepped up on the curb, and then he shot him. So, I mean, he was pretty close. Are you asking about the defendant? Pretty close, pretty much on top of the victim. So, again, at that point, he lost his right to self-defense. It wasn't reasonable for him to believe he was in any danger. He was lying on the ground in a prone position. Any other questions on that? Just quickly say that, again, I have listened to all the conversations, and the way the defendant interprets most of the conversation, I think, is very different from what she actually said. I think he extrapolates too much about what she said. One of the things, so he argues that she agreed with his statement that we just bumped into each other. Again, that statement was made by defendant, not her. She just asked, did you even see each other? And she said, and he said, let me tell you, we just bumped into each other. And then she asked him, she said, yeah, I didn't know if you see each other, whatever. But again, even if that were the case, the fact that they bumped into each other would not negate that he knowingly killed the victim and that he did not act in self-defense. And again, Your Honor, there are four elements. He has to satisfy four of them to be entitled to the new trial. Okay? Not just that, that the evidence was discovered after trial, that they exercised diligence. And one thing, and I think you asked a question about that, it is true that maybe he did not know the reason why she called him, but he could have elicited that testimony during cross-examination of the ex-girlfriend. He was on the stand many times. He was allowed, in fact, cross-examined her thoroughly. The trial court did not really limit the way he was conducted the cross-examination. He was granted a lot of leeway. He could have asked why she called me. He could have elicited that evidence on the stand. He didn't. He fails also the second element of the test. And again, just a quick summary, the evidence wasn't a material, and he would have not bring about an acquittal upon retrial. So unless the court has any other questions, the people ask that this court affirm the trial court denial of defendant's motion and also affirm defendant's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We're out of time. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course. Counselor, excuse me.